is In Focus on News Radio 1350 KMAN.
And good morning. Welcome into In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. My name is Brandon Peoples, joined by Representative Tom Phillips from the 67th District in the Kansas Legislature in the House. Tom, thanks for being here, first of all.
Good morning, Brandon. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have you in here, especially given your normally busy schedule here with the legislative session. I know you guys had a short break here.
We did. The way it was explained to me, and I don't know if this is true or not, but, you know, back in the day when people had to put their crops in the field, and so the legislators took a 3-week break, and they would go back home and ensure that they were able to get their farming work done and then come back and finish up the veto session. So, and that's what we start tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock.
So veto session, give us a sense of what this entails here. I know there's a lot of bills that you'll be sifting through.
Yes. You know, I think the original intent of the veto session was simply to deal with veto overrides of bills that the governor had vetoed. Now, we obviously still do much more than that today. One of the most important things that we have to do is pass a budget. And then And that's going to be probably the biggest issue. And then the second one will be Medicaid expansion. And that's going to be real interesting to watch. And I'm sure most of your listeners are aware that the Kansas House has passed that. And we had to go through kind of a contorted exercise to get that to the House floor to debate and approval. And tomorrow the Senate will have a vote I think it requires 24 votes of the 40-member Senate to take the Medicaid expansion out of committee and then bring it up to the floor of the Senate for debate. And then it will take 27 senators, I think, to pass that bill. So it will be interesting to see how they deal with it. I know there is a tremendous amount of lobbying and pressure going on the senators, and it'll be anxious to see how that plays out tomorrow.
It seems like since Governor Kelly took over here in January, there's been quite a bit of pressure here to get something done on Medicaid expansion here. Do you think that there's a sense that the Senate wants to debate this here?
No. I can tell you that Senate leadership does not want to. They I think their preference is to not tackle the issue this year. They're saying we'll take a time over the summer and study it some more, and then take it up next session. This topic has been studied for years. I think that's just simply a delay tactic, in my opinion. And I've been told that if there would be enough votes to pass it, it would be close, but there may be enough votes to pass it if they get it up to debate on the floor. But again, the leadership does not want that to happen.
And that's interesting because, you know, I think most, if not all, the Democrats in the legislature support it. And there's a good consortium of Republicans who support this as well, including yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, on the House floor, our leadership didn't want to debate it either. Mm-hmm. And we had to take a maneuver where we took a bill and stripped the contents. A lot of people know it as gut and go. Stripped the contents of that bill out on the House floor. And then inserted Medicaid expansion. And then it was challenged, and then there were enough votes to override the ruling of the committee or the rules chair, which I'd never seen before. And that was a real tough vote for me because I do respect Representative Blaine Finch and his opinion and his work. But this was an important topic, and I think it's important to the state of Kansas. It's important here to Manhattan, to our own local hospital. Our own local Chamber of Commerce is supportive of it. I've talked to a lot of constituents that are supportive of it. You know, I do have some constituents that are not, and I recognize that. But overall, I think there's strong support here in the community for it, and I think there is statewide also.
What would be the added cost here if this were to actually become law here?
Yeah, that's a good question and a lot of debate. Numbers range from $30 to $50 million a year. Some argue that there will be cost savings and you know there will be more people hired in the local communities. So, but the number that on the impact on the state budget, the number that I'm hearing is between $30 and $50 million a year.
Interesting. Well, and, you know, a big part of that, too, is the mental health aspect of it. We've seen some of the mental hospitals closing here, And, you know, we've had some good news here with Pawnee Mental Health having their expansion recently.
Exactly. And you know, the local delegation, worked hard to make sure that I think it was about $750,000 grant was included in the appropriations bill to enable the state to become a partner with our local community to ensure this happens. And you know, a lot of credit goes to Robin Cole, I think she was the mayor, Yusha Reddy, Karen McCullough. There were a lot of individuals here that really were driving forces to ensure that we had tackled mental health. Because the state of Kansas at that point in time, you know, our revenue was in a downward trend. We were not in a good place. And our local leaders said, we have to do something here. And Brad Schoen was a strong advocate for it, because a lot of times these individuals ended up being under the care of our local police department, which is not right. So I'm pleased and excited for Pawnee Mental Health and for our community and the region.
Yeah, we're speaking with Representative Tom Phillips here from the Kansas House 67th District here in Manhattan. He's a Republican lawmaker. And, you know, not only Medicaid expansion is a big topic right now, it has been for a while, also school funding. And we should have oral arguments beginning here in May, as I understand it.
Yes. And we'll all be waiting for the final issuance of the court's opinion, which I think would be in June, but I'm not positive about that. I'm hoping that they will find what we have done constitutional and compliance with their opinion of the school funding responsibility for adequacy. You know, just a short history, we added about another $90 million each of the next 3 years to ensure compliance, and it had to deal with an inflation factor on the funding formula. So we'll see. I mean, my goodness, if they choose not to and make us add a lot more money, it's going to really put the legislature in a stressive situation because, and I've probably said this many times before, I'm a strong supporter of public education, but the more and more money that we put into public education just allows us a less opportunity to tackle mental health, Medicaid expansion, all these other issues that we would like to address as state leaders. It's a balancing act, trying to figure out where we can put limited resources to achieve the greatest public good.
What bearing does that have here on in trying to get this budget finalized here? Because you do have to wait, I guess, on the Supreme Court a little bit here.
Well, no, we'll go ahead and pass a budget, and that will then allow the local school districts to figure out how to plan for their budgets. If they rule against what we have done, then there would be a special session over the summer, and then we would come back and try to have to figure out what it's going to take to satisfy the court, whether that's adding more money or whatever the issue may be. But over the next week or 2 weeks, we will pass a budget. And you know, we start the whole legislative process in January with Governor Kelly putting forth her budget proposal. And then the House prepares a budget, and the Senate prepares a budget. And now we're at the end of the process, and we're in conference committee where the House and the Senate is trying to negotiate a compromise budget, if you will. And I don't think we're that far apart between what the governor's budget request is, what the House is seeking, and what the Senate is. So we're not that far apart, and that's why I think that could be resolved pretty quickly.
All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see, because I know we've had you know, this has been going on, obviously, for several years now, and each year it seems like it's the same outcome. We have a funding bill.
I know. And you know, I should also add that I think the Supreme Court will keep the court case open because, you know, we have a five-year funding plan. I think we're in year four. We've already funded it for 1 year. So they're going to – I'm sure the Supreme Court's going to say, okay, we find what you have done satisfactory. That's my hope. But we're going to keep the case open so you legislators pass a budget every year to fulfill the funding plan that you said you're going to do. So, yeah, I think that they'll keep the case open to make sure that we are, like I said, fulfilling our obligations and what we've committed ourselves to do.
We have a phone call here on the line here, so let's get to it. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Good morning. What is your... feeling and opinion on the fact that you're talking about school taxes and taxes, et cetera. What do you feel about the, if a person turns 65, they're probably not going to have any more children. Should they be taken off of the school tax roll? They retire at that time at 65, 66. Money isn't great, and it's just an added tax. And they've paid in all those years. Person lives to be 80, 90 years old. Should they have to pay tax on that extended time? Or the people that kids are in school pay for, because that's the way it was when they were paying.
Right, right. That's a good question, and thank you for it. It's a complicated question, I will say that, because it's one where I suppose, depending on your outlook, whether you think of ourselves as a community and saying that you know, each generation has some responsibility for the next generation, the one that's coming up after them. And I believe that's the case. You know, I'm thankful for the previous generations that taxed themselves to build the school systems, the park system, the road system that I have benefited from, and that my children have benefited from. So I do think that there probably should continue to be some level of responsibility for all of us to, as citizens of a community or state, to help for the greater public good. I do recognize that there are individuals on fixed income, and that's really what you're talking about, in retirement years, particularly the property tax. Property tax is probably the greatest tax I hear the most complaints about, because they keep going up and up and up, and that's an issue that I know all our local leaders struggle with and are trying to do. So, and I know that there has been some conversation and some bill introduced in the legislature trying to cap property tax on individuals, I think it's 65, and retired veterans, that their property taxes are then set at a cap level so that they're not having to deal with this constant increase in property tax on a fixed income. But to answer your question, I mean, I tend to think that we're kind of all in this together, and we do have a responsibility for the generation that follows after us.
All right. Thanks for the question. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more with 67th District Representative Tom Phillips when we return on In Focus.
The KMAN Morning Show is brought to you by Pew Communication Services, a division of Economy Electric, providing all of your